Hello everyone, welcome to the Game Engineering Podcast. Today I am joined by Green Laser, the author of the Ellipso engine. We discuss how to make your own engine from scratch, so we talk about a suite of libraries that you'll need if you want to start with an OpenGL C++ engine. I hope you enjoy the episode. Tell me a little bit about you, what's your name, who are you, and about the Ellipso engine that you're building.
You can call me Green Laser. Ellipso engine is my C++ OpenGL engine that I built by myself. And I use a couple of open source libraries like GLFW, GLM, and a couple of others to basically render a lot of the stuff, because OpenGL itself really doesn't provide those things. So those libraries that I add on top of my source code kind of help with the whole progress.
Yeah, so we can actually start about this. You're building your engine, and generally speaking, if anybody wants to build an engine, needs to start somewhere, and the usual place to do this is to start with C++. And if you're starting from such a raw place, I would say, you probably should know that, depending on the platform you're developing on, simple things that you can, as a developer, take for granted, like window creation, is not so obvious. And you either need to directly interact with Windows SDK, or if you're now on the Apple, you need to interact with OS X SDK, or you're using some libraries that do this for you. And GLFW, you mentioned, is one of such libraries, right?
Yeah, GLFW is basically usable for rendering a simple window. I think it's also cross-platform, so you may be even able to use it on Linux and Mac as well. It literally just allows simple input detection, like all your keyboard and mouse detection, and it builds a window that you can use other libraries to render stuff inside of.
Yeah, and you mentioned the other libraries. Can you tell us what they do?
So basically, I use CMake to build files for the engine. So like the actual executable is built from source code with CMake. GLAD is basically like a layer on top of GLFW that helps with calculations and stuff. And GLM is also a calculation thing, but for graphical things. Then a small library I use is called Magic Enum. It basically enumeration is like you have a list of these things that you can pick between, like action one, action two, action three. C++ doesn't really provide a way to convert strings like string to enum, so I use this library for that. And then stb_image is used for simple texture loading. And finally, dirimgui is like the engine GUI library that actually renders the engine GUI itself.
Yeah. So even to start the game engine, you already need to find lots of libraries and connect them into one single project. And you mentioned CMake. Can you tell me a little bit about CMake, how it works?
So CMake is pretty much the IDE, or the programming software I use to actually write code, is called Visual Studio. The reason I use CMake is that CMake is kind of like a layer on top of Visual Studio to help manage the settings of Visual Studio in a single TXT file. So instead of having to go to Visual Studio and tweak all the things, I can just use a single TXT file to configure the entire build progress of my engine executable.
Yeah, and it's Probably worth to mention that C++ as a ecosystem doesn't have a fancy package manager like you can find in either C Sharp or Python or Rust or in JavaScript, TypeScript world. So you can't really say add glm or add glfw as a library. You need to go to the library and figure out how it is being distributed, what is the file, what are the directories, where is the whether this is the dyna you want to compile it from source or use the dynamic library, static library, all this stuff you need to figure out and then connect to your make or CMake project, right? So it's not easy to start to connect all those things together. And this is why you're using CMake also for this, right?
Yeah, CMake makes the whole progress so much easier. You don't have, because Visual Studio's own settings are also really confusing as well for me. So CMake like helps make the whole progress so much easier because I can just tell it where all the source files, header files are, and how to build the progress, how to include specific extra files. It even has a few extra commands to move some files during the build progress. So like it's a whole package. It really simplified. It's kind of like similar to the other language package managers you mentioned, but instead of having a GUI for it, I just write into a single TXT file to do all those actions in one go.
Yeah, it provides like a semi, like a small programming language in and of itself, right? To commands
Yeah.
to build the
Yeah, exactly.
projects. Yeah. Okay. So walking through this process, you start from a C++ source code, and you then add create a window. Right? You're using GLFW for this. And GLFW helps also with the input detection, generally speaking, like an interface between your computer, your operating system, and your program. And how does the graphics part come into place in this process?
So OpenGL itself is technically built into your GPU, but it doesn't really provide a way to actually render what is what you want to render on the window that you created. So GLFW is also kind of like a bridge between your OpenGL on your graphics card and your window. And then GLM is also on top of that, helps with us making everything work perfectly. It's like a math library pretty much. So like GLM plus GLFW is used to draw the render, to draw the window, and to draw all the shapes on the window itself.
Yeah, because it's also different than compared to just raw source code other libraries. You have the implementations of like the l libraries already inside the GPU, but you need bindings and you need to know where there are what to call kind of. And these I think you mentioned GLAD before, right? I think GLAD helps with that, to provide you with the actual bindings, that if you call the binding like a function, it will actually do what it's supposed to do with the implementation that is already there on your GPU.
OpenGL is like a really simplified version of all of it. It doesn't really have all the complicated ways that the libraries I use can actually draw the shape on the window itself. Like OpenGL is can draw, but it doesn't know where to draw and how to draw. Like all the vertices of a shape, it knows how it works, but it doesn't know how to display it on the actual window you create.
Yeah, and you mentioned GLM, right? Graphics Library Math, I think that's what it stands for. So this is the library for all sorts of linear algebra, which is pretty much 90% of rendering and graphics code, is to have 3D points and manipulate them with matrices, vector operations.
Yeah, and GLM also provides a shader language called GLSL, which is used to create vertex and fragment shaders to actually render the thing on the screen as well. Because you can write all your vertices and things, but if you don't have a shader file to actually render the shape, then the other code doesn't really do much.
Yeah, so let's maybe introduce this. So far we have a single file, C++ file, that interacts with all sorts of libraries and creates a window, right? This is what we have now. And ability to interact with keyboard and inputs. What else would then we need to do to create like a basic 3D, a basic triangle, like a hello world in the graphics library?
Well, all you pretty much need is GLFW, GLAD, and GLM. You don't need any of the other libraries to render a triangle. The three basic libraries already handle everything you need for it.
But you mentioned shaders, and they're needed to do this. So how would you render a triangle step by step?
You need to have the shaders in place, the vertex shader and the fragment shader are basically what display all the colors and the shape itself. And then GLM, GLAD, and GLFW help interact with the shader files to place the vertices in the right spot and to render the color or whatever shape you decided to make.
And this is part of the rendering pipeline, right? There is this common phrase to call this pipeline. With OpenGL, you're actually interacting with a predefined rendering pipeline, which has its own steps, and those shaders are the steps that you can interact with, and you provide the source code in the, as you mentioned, GLSL, so graphics library shading language, to tell how to manipulate. In the vertex shader, you're running a shader every vertex, and in the fragment shader, running for every fragment, so we can say for every pixel, right?
Yeah, and before you can actually run the shader and the actual shape, you need to initialize them. You need to initialize GLM, you need to initialize GLFW, and you need to create a window. So all of that is done once at the start of the program. And then you have a while loop that runs every frame until the user closes the executable. Then we have a little bit of cleanup, and then the actual return zero closes the executable.
So this would be like the hello world example of the graphics programming to set up all this, all these libraries. Render a triangle is usually considered like a first basic program in this world. And what would you say where this transforms into game engine, like a full float game, full game engine with ability to do stuff inside and make games with it.
Well, to actually make a program and to actually interact with stuff, like the next step usually after a triangle is to make a cube shape. So instead of just three vertex points, you have eight vertex points, and you connect each one of those together to make the cube shape. And then from there, you start to make more complex shapes and more complex shaders to actually render a scene.
Okay, so adding more complicated 3D models with actually 3D because let's say triangle is not that, not doesn't have depth, so it's pretty much flat. So adding more complex scenes to render them. Okay.
Yeah, and you need a camera to be able to move around and see stuff from different angles. And OpenGL itself already is 3D from the beginning. It's just that if you don't have a camera to move around, you will always see one angle of the whole scene you are rendering.
Yeah. So how does this development differs from developing, for example, in a engine like Unity?
The difference is that Unity already has everything set up for you, and you just write like a function or some kind of a thing you want to do for an already built engine. Like, they handle all the rendering, all the graphics, all everything you need to build a game. They already have it in place. But for my engine, I have to build all of the groundwork from scratch. I don't have like a working rendering pipeline. I have to build that from scratch myself with the provided libraries.
Okay. So maybe that's the proper also place to ask, why are you building Elipso engine? Why did you, have you decided to spend your time and effort on it?
So the primary reason is the scandal that Unity pulled off in 2023 with its payment updates. So that was kind of like the last straw for me. I just couldn't. It looked like Unity was going downhill for years, and then that was the last point for me. So I just decided I could use my own engine. So I wouldn't risk any future games to have any problems that Unity could have in the future because of the scandal it did.
Have you considered the Godot engine?
It doesn't provide the same mechanics that Unity does. It's much more simpler, and it's more for 2D games.
Okay. So you're building Elipso engine for 3D games with this 3D mindset in mind. Do you have plans whether it will be open source?
Oh yeah, it already is open source. I already have the repository available on GitHub for anyone to see all the source code.
And you want to remain in this spirit throughout the
Yeah.
development.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So coming back to the technical aspects of Elipso engine. So we mentioned and we covered the rendering pipeline, how it would look like to create a scene with probably a camera that moves around and you can view the scene from different angles, things like that. And you mentioned Dear IM GUI. Can you tell me more about the library?
Dear imgui is the engine GUI rendering library that I use to draw all the in like GLFW draws the actual engine main window itself, but imgui is like draws all the little windows, all the buttons and everything you can interact with the engine GUI. Imgui handles that part of the engine.
And IM GUI, I think, is a quite popular library in the C++ world, right?
Yeah, it's really popular, and it's also open source.
Yeah, I think one of the advantages is also that it does not have external dependencies, so it's quite easy to build, and it's mainly C++, which is an important part for the libraries in the C/C++ world to have easy way to build them and easy way to use them.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think the Elipso engine already has foundations for ECS, so Entity Component System, right?
Yep.
So can you tell me a little bit more about what ECS is and what's the deal with ECS in general, why it's useful?
So you can think of ECS as a way for each game object to have its own identity apart from the rest of the game objects. So each game object has its own transform mesh component and any other components it may need. So transform is pretty much its own position, rotation, and scale. The mesh is the actual mesh of the object, like the shape, and the material usually has things like shaders and textures and things. So you how it looks visually. You can add a bunch more components as much as you want, like physics and any kind of animation. So each one of those components is connected to that specific game object only. No other game object in the entire game engine has the same copy of those components. So that's why ECS is super useful.
And ECS stands for Entity Component System, right? So the
Yeah.
game object would be the entity, right?
Yeah.
And so you mentioned that you can add more components to it. So the idea would be to have a system that accepts different components from various entities. And thus, for example, in terms of physics, you would have each entity that would require physics have a physics component, and then a system, which is like a physics engine, that accepts and runs the physics code for all the components all together, which is, I think, a little bit different than the what Unity does, for example, by default, right?
I haven't really dug that deep into how Unity works, but I think visually my ECS system is kind of similar to how Unity handles it. I don't know how the actual mechanics in detail work in Unity. I just wanted my engine ECS to look the same way as well.
Yeah, but it's also probably useful to mention that ECS is not only about the looks, right? Because you can imagine that once you start building a game, like we mentioned, physics is not necessarily present in every game. So in Unity, what you do is you have the different callbacks that you can implement, like update is for the rendering update for each frame, but you also have a fixed update, which is used for physics, because in order for a physics simulation to be stable, you usually use a non-variable, so constant step size for the physics simulation. So for the rendering, you want to run as fast as possible every frame, but for the physics, for the stability of the simulation, you want to have a fixed size. And Unity does this by providing you two different callbacks. But in the true ECS system, you wouldn't have it rendered as a callbacks, really. You would have such things as physics or rendering, or for example, if you're making a game about growing plants, it might be a component related to the plant growth, right? And you would have all those logic parts split into components, and then have systems that for each frame run through all of the components of a given entities and update and run this, like run updates for the component. So this means that in Unity you have kind of like a game object, and you're invited to create a script that will hold all the logic in another game object, and then those game objects will be in a loop updated every frame. But in the ECS architecture, it's a little bit different approach. The entities, like the game objects, are split into different kind of responsibilities, different components. So the physics part is not near the, let's say, growing part if it's planned or rendering component. And those components are updated in the systems so that, for example, it can use the cache much more efficiently for the processor. So you can imagine that if you have a physics component and you want to update falling objects, right, with having the gravity, if it's Unity way of updating things, every object is falling down and you need to find the gravity number, and it's probably not gonna be near you in cache because you, for example, first updated the things related to the growing component, then you updated the things for the rendering, and then you're updating the physics. So you need to load the variables and load the gravity into probably the cache, and then you move on to updating another game object. But in an ECS, in the ECS architecture, you would update all of the physics components at once. So there is much higher probability that you will be loading all the physics variables for each game objects in succession. So you will not load data that will invalidate your gravity component, so that you could use the gravity scale that you had. It's probably loaded in cache because you are only dealing with the physics variables, right?
No.
Yeah. And this is a little bit different. If you use this ECS approach for all parts of the engine, working with the code will be a little bit different, because your own, like a game object in Unity, is quite coherent, right? So all parts of the game object are pretty much in the same place. But in the ECS, it's split into components, so it can be a little bit scattered around all the places.
Basically, my ECS works with encapsulation, which means that each game object always has a transform, mesh, and material component. So those three are always included with each game object, no matter how many you create. But I will also allow dynamic components, which can be added on top of those static components that every game object must have. So Unity only allows you to have, Unity only forces you to have a transform, but for my system, you always need to have a mesh and a material component as well, because I try to do it in a more direct way, where every game object always has some kind of a shape, even if it's transparent and it's just used for debugging or whatever. It always needs to have a shape, and it always needs to have some kind of material. So the material has some kind of a shader that can make it transparent, if that's what you prefer. And the mesh itself can still be a cube, but if you want it to be transparent and not render it, it can be that way. But it always needs a mesh, and it always needs a material to ensure that it runs exactly the same way as every other component. Because every component in my engine, every entity in my engine always needs a shape, whatever shape it can be, and it always needs a material, whatever shader or texture you choose.
Okay. Aren't you afraid that in the bigger scenes, the overload with having to render objects that have transparent meshes will become more visible for the performance of the scene?
By transparent, I mean that if the object transparency is set to zero, then the object is technically not even rendered at all.
Okay.
So like So, like, there's two kinds of transparency that I will have. So, the main transparency is the one that doesn't even render the object. And the second transparency is the transparency you are familiar with, which kind of makes the object partially visible, to some degree. Not completely invisible, but you can still see it in some way. But if you set the object to fully transparent with the first transparency value, then the object is not even included in the render pipeline. Like it's still technically rendered, but the graphics pipeline does not see it in any way. So it doesn't put any performance hit in any way on the graphics card.
Okay, got it. Okay, what are then the next steps for Elipso Engine? What do you have in your immediate roadmap for the next couple of months? What are you now focusing on?
Actually, in the couple of months, I want to make the engine like I want to have an extremely basic whole like system ready for making really simple games, because in the next couple of months, my engine is planned to go into alpha. So starting from alpha, you will have a full like pipeline from start to finish to make a really simple games. I want to finish the node system. I want to finish Elipso Hub, which works similarly to how Unity Hub works, but with my own engine. And I want to finish adding another library, which is called Asimp. So instead of rendering simple cubes like I do right now, Asimp will allow me to import like a OBJ model, for example, that already has all the data it needs. And yeah, so Asimp, Node, and Elipso Hub are the three major things I want to release.
And I think your Trello board is public, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so if anyone wants to follow your work, where one can do that.
The Trello board link is pasted on my Discord server as well.
Yeah, so
So.
I will put those links also in the description of this episode. So it's you can follow the work and follow the Elipso engine development on the Discord channel. You can see the board, Trello board with the roadmap, but also you have a YouTube channel where you post updates about the engine, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so there with the visuals you can see what's happening in the on the Elipso engine side of things and how new things with each release change the engine.
Yeah, I always release short videos. If I have something really cool I want to show off, I will show that in a separate video, and then I will also want to do more release videos for each released version. I haven't really done that much before. I just did it for 0.0.10.
Okay. Are there any lessons learned so far that you would like to share? From, first of all, from stepping, let's say, away from Unity development and from generally speaking, going a little bit more low level into building your own game engine?
I want to say that I tried doing this a couple of times before, but I wasn't successful because I overthought how much work actually goes into even making a program. Not even not even talking about an engine, but like a regular program itself already requires so much more work. And C++ is like another level more difficult from C sharp. If you're coming from Unity or Godot or Unreal or whatever, they already have a built system for you. But if you're making your own system, there's so much stuff you need to learn before you can even start making anything. I didn't start from scratch. I also had to learn all the details. I'm still using OpenGL tutorial. That's super popular for rendering all the OpenGL stuff. I didn't learn it from myself. I'm still following tutorials to even make the basics. I'm still in the learning process. So you have to learn so much beginner stuff in C++ in general and OpenGL in general before you can even make your own engine or anything graphical.
And the tutorial you mentioned, is this learnopengl.com?
Yes, it's the best one for OpenGL.
Yeah, it's quite well known. I've used it, I think, a couple of years ago to get also my code up and running related to OpenGL. It's quite well known, and it's I think also the Cherno, the Jan Chernikov has a channel on YouTube called the Cherno, and he made some videos related to how to create your own game engine. He's now working on the Hazel engine. Have you seen them?
Yeah, he's really popular on YouTube.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Dan, for talking to me and telling me a little bit more about the Ellipso engine. Do you have any closing thoughts?
If you want to go into engine development, then you have to be prepared to put in the hours and the skills. You can't just start from build zero. You have to have some previous experience.